Hey everyone, and welcome at a new episode of Human Hearts, Silicon Minds. Today we're going to interview David Smith. He's a Microsoft Cloud Advocate and assists enterprise organizations with how to use AI within their organization. So let's have an interesting conversation with him. David, thank you for inviting us here in this beautiful environment.
I'm so glad you could come and see Napa Valley. I'm so excited you're here.
Yeah, thanks. Now, just to start off, can you please introduce yourself?
I'm David Smith. I work for Microsoft in the Cloud Advocacy team, and I specialize in artificial intelligence, machine learning, and data science.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that, about artificial intelligence. It's been a hectic 2023. A lot of things have been changing in the world of AI. How did it impact your life?
It turned it around. Ever since ChatGPT launched to the public, I mean, we'd heard about these large language models before. You know, BERT was a thing, and you know, people were experimenting with it, but it had never entered the public consciousness before ChatGPT, and that overnight just absolutely changed everything. We went from, as a team, communicating to the global community about what Microsoft does to focusing completely on large language models and, you know, OpenAI in particular, and trying to explain to the world kind of what this means in terms of technology and how it's built, but also what it means in terms of how it's going to change people's lives.
How did it impact your own personal life, AI?
Ah, that's a really good question. I mean, other than the work side and just being really busy, but it's completely changed the way I get answers to questions. I don't turn to web search anymore. The first thing I do is I open up ChatGPT or an equivalent. I use Bing quite a lot and type my questions into there. And, you know, I'm aware because I work in the industry, kind of, you know, ways it works well and ways it doesn't work well and when to double check and, you know, when to be confident in the responses. But bottom line is, for me, that's the place I turn to because it's the quickest way to get answers to just about any question. Same thing, like at work, you know, since they introduced Copilot into Windows, you know, just being able to, you know, Windows C and ask a question, like I was asking something yesterday about, you know, how do I do some underlining a word in something, you know, things that I wouldn't even bothered trying to figure out before, I would just give it up at that point. But being able to get answers within just a couple of minutes that actually work is pretty transformative.
Yeah, I was shocked the other time I read some article that Microsoft was going to change now their keyboard layout.
Oh yeah, they're bringing in a Windows
Copilot button. Biggest change in so many years that they did on a keyboard, adding a new button. So that's quite impressive. Now, I think the way we use AI is mostly as, let's say, white-collar workers. How do you think AI has impacted blue-collar workers?
That's a really good question, and I don't have a good answer for that, because I think while people are kind of aware of, you know, ChatGPT and chatbots in general, I don't think lots of people are using them. Like, I still, like, it's a great conversation topic when I'm out with friends of, you know, topic of AI comes up. I'm like, you know, being able to show people what it can do and how it can answer questions or create poems or do images. And this is a big surprise, I think, still to a lot of people. And I think a lot of people have yet to discover kind of, you know, what it could do for them. But even in, it's not specific to tech industry, the kind of questions it can answer. It asks questions about anything. So I think it would affect, you know, people in blue collar jobs as much as it would in white collar jobs or people working in nonprofits or agriculture or, you know, any kind of industry.
Well, I think linked to that, you also said there's quite some people who still make use of it as some kind of toy to play with it, just like that. How do you think we can transform that to a tool that people can really use to change their own jobs?
I don't think there's much we need to do, Ionos. Like, I think people are attracted to the toy side of it. Like, it's you know, the dancing bear syndrome. Like, see a computer, write a poem. And that's cool, but I don't need anybody to write poems for me. But I do need to get answers to questions. I do need to get first drafts of documents. I do need to get summaries of, you know, rather than reading a 30-page PDF, like, just tell me what are the 10 most important points here so I can move on. And I think that applies to absolutely everybody. I think people are interested seeing the toy side of it just because it's so new and so surprising. But the path from there to actually asking questions that I care about the answer for is very, very short. And I think that's why it's going to be so transformative, is because it's such a short path between this thing exists to this thing can really do something helpful for me right now.
Yeah. And its usefulness is very important, mm-hmm. because at the end, technology consumes also quite some energy and it takes quite some time to build.
Yeah.
But linked to that, we also have, we need to make sure people trust this kind of technology. Mm-hmm. To my opinion, to be able to trust something, mm-hmm. people also need to somehow understand how it works.
Yep.
How do you think we can help people to understand this kind of technology?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And starting with the trust side of it, like, I think we all have an inherent distrust, I suppose is the right word, but we understand the limitations, let's put it that way, better, of things as simple as web search. Like, you know, we don't trust necessarily the first result from any web search, and we don't trust necessarily that we're going to get the answers we want with the first web search, and we might need to refine things and try different words or phrases to get the actual answers we want. But we've had 20 years of getting to know web search and how to understand its limitations and how to get the most out of it. I mean, this whole, you know, chat AI thing has been around for less than a year. So I think we're still, even on the tech side of things, getting used to what are the best ways to working with, let alone the broader population of kind of understanding what its limitations are and how best to use it. But you're absolutely right. We've got a lot of education work to explain to people that you shouldn't trust the words that come out of AIs at face value, because they're not intelligences, they're machine learning models that are doing predictions of the next words from things, and actually understanding behind the scenes of how these things generate the words that they produce or the images that they produce is very helpful to understanding what those limitations might be. But that being said, I don't think everybody needs to understand the underlying mathematics and data behind these models. But I do think we need to build up a good series of practices around, you know, what is the right way to pose the questions? How do you validate the responses that come out of those? If they're not what you want, how do you iterate to ask different kinds of questions? And we'll learn that over the next 20 years, just as we have over the last 20 years with web search.
Yeah. Yeah. You work mostly with enterprise organizations. Mm-hmm. Well, to my own experience also, I've noticed certain organizations still block the usage of this Gen AI.
They block the usage.
Yeah, yeah. And then certain ones you have that they really go full throttle in it. What's your opinion about that?
Well, I think it's prudent, first of all. I mean, unlike a web search where the only data you're providing to the system is a few keywords, with these AI systems, what you want to be able to do is provide like a big document and ask questions about that document, or perhaps even provide an entire corpus, a whole collection of documents, and then ask questions about those. And that inherently means that some system has got to have access to those documents. And if you're working with proprietary information or trade secrets or anything like that, then it's right to have a concern about where is this data going, and, you know, what is a company that's providing this service going to do with that data. So that's why I think that a lot of these enterprise ChatGPT, enterprise AI systems are coming about now, many produced by Microsoft, of course, that provide those kinds of guarantees that enterprises are looking for, that the data that these systems are looking at isn't going out of your protected sphere, you know, within a cloud, for example. And it's never going to be used to ultimately train those models, so the data can't leak then to other users of those things going forward. So I think once enterprises have that trust that the data that they're using with those systems is being protected as they expect all of their data to be, then they'll become much more comfortable about using that. And I think we also have to make the distinction between enterprise systems versus consumer systems. You know, ChatGPT being the first, that's available to everybody. It's a consumer system that everybody is sharing the same infrastructure on. And so, of course, you don't want to provide private information to that in the same way that you don't want to upload a private document to a public website. And I think, again, it's going to take some education and some understanding about how data is used when you use these systems, and also how when you train these systems.
So what you're saying, it's up to the organizations or the personal, the people on itself, like, okay, what kind of data are you actually sending into the system, and on which kind of system? Is it the public one or is it the private
version? Actually, I'm not even sure it's up to the individuals. Mm. I think this is more of a corporate level kind of a conversation. A CTO will be making decisions about which kind of AI system am I going to adopt or build within my organization in such a way that it does adhere to the privacy and security concerns that I have about, you know, my company's data.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, linked to that, we see that these AI models, they the answers that they're giving are quite intelligent, let's say it like that.
They seem that way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's somehow linked in, let's say, the general public to move Hollywood movies where AI is taking over the world and linking to super intelligence and singularity.
Yeah.
How do you personally think about that?
Personally, I think we're quite a ways from that. You know, I think there are some legitimate concerns to be had, absolutely, about, you know, where this technology might go and how quickly. But I certainly think that the things we have today are fundamentally not intelligent systems. As I said, it's an algorithm that's predicting out the next word from things. It's a very useful algorithm in the sense that, you know, you're no longer constrained by exact language, and it's robust to, you know, typos in the things you enter, and it can assimilate information from lots of different sources at once. So it's definitely doing something new and unique, but it's not intelligent. And I don't really see any potential consequences from the technology that we have today around that, except in the sense of how people might use it. You know, we have concerns today around, you know, what happens when governments assimilate data from so many different sources that it yields information about, let's say, individuals that wouldn't otherwise be available. I think the same concerns apply here, that, you know, we're connecting together different kinds of data sources, you know, whether it be on a consumer system, you know, connecting together the data across the internet, or in an enterprise system, connecting together the data within the company, that we might, there might be some unforeseen consequences about things that might be learned, or things we might be able to do that we simply weren't able to do feasibly without this technology. But that's true of all the technologies that we produce, is that we need to be aware of kind of what are the downstream implications of any kind of technological system that we build or process that we deployed. I think that's why it's really important that, you know, anyone, you know, especially at the enterprise level, deploying AI systems, be aware of responsible AI principles. And it's not just about, you know, the responses to the AI system as well. Is it producing responses that are fair or ethical or equitable? But also the entire system that you're building, you know, does it provide transparency? You know, is it applied fairly? Does it change, you know, the actual lives of the people, your customers, or your constituents, in how you're applying this? But these are the questions we should be asking about any technology that we deploy.
Every big discovery has always been used in the wrong way also. So it's always need to be careful in how we are going to use it and doesn't get into the wrong hands, you could say. But I think linked to that, we see some governments are starting to build up quite some legislation about how to use AI.
Yeah.
Like you have the EU AI Act that now has been fully released, not in working handle yet. But do you think that will help?
I think regulation in general is a good thing, you know, especially in light of new technology like this. I think there are lots of arguments to be had about, you know, is this the right legislation, or does it, you know, constrain things too much, or leave too many, you know, opportunities for bad behavior within them. But I think the actually important thing is that the legislation exists and binds all the players, particularly the technology producer players, equally. And I think what that means is that, you know, each of those players are then more enabled, I think is the right word, to you know, slow down a little bit. They're not under the competitive pressure they're not under the competitive pressure in the way of anybody can do anything, so therefore we have to do absolutely everything just in order to keep up. I think as long as there is a good legislative framework in place, it levels that playing field so that everybody in the playing field can proceed responsibly.
If you would be able to give anyone who's watching this keynote what tip would you be able to give them to look into for the next coming months?
Yeah, I would go to copilot.microsoft.com and try out some questions. And I think it's this combination of having a system that understands your language and the way that you ask questions, coupled with the resources of the entire web to be able to search for information and assimilate that back to you. It really just changes the way that you work in any kind of business that requires information, and that's every business. So go ahead and try it out and, you know, see how it changes the way that you work.
What do you personally expect that will still change in the next coming months in the world of AI?
I think there'll be a lot more models. OpenAI started it with ChatGPT and the GPT series of models, but now there's lots of great open source models out there coming, like Llama, for example. Microsoft just produced the Pi model, I think they pronounce it. And
Game open source.
An open source model. It's very small. And I think, having these models be able to run directly on a cell phone without having to go out to the web, I think it's going to have some really interesting applications. This whole space has changed so much in such a short space of time. You could ask me again in 2 months and I'll have completely different answers about what's new.
Well, I'll come back to you in 2 months then.
All right, then.
Thank you very much for your time, David. And we're looking forward to learn more about what's going to happen in the next coming months.
Thanks so much, Sammy.